to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
This morning with Morgan Godfrey. Kia ora, Morgan. How are you?
Kia ora, Rachel. I'm good.
It's lovely, lovely to have you on the show this morning. Thank you very much for agreeing to come on.
Oh, no worries. It's great to be here.
Hey, there's heaps going on at the moment. We're going to especially talk a bit about Ihumātau because you've written some really interesting things about it in the last couple of weeks. It's obviously a very complex issue, and many people, most notably the government, have been saying that it's an issue between Māori and that the government ultimately has to respect the views of local iwi. I'm sort of paraphrasing here. Essentially, what does this mean, and do you think that's a fair claim for them to be making?
It is and it isn't at the same time, because yes, there is disagreement between the tribal authority, the Dununga, and pretty much all the other iwi members who are saying we don't want this. The tribal authority says we want the development to go ahead. The iwi members say no, we don't want the development to go ahead. But it actually doesn't matter what either of them say, because it's Fletcher Building who are enforcing their property rights. So it's not, for example, the tribal authority saying we're going to build. It's actually Fletcher Building that is saying we are going to have this 480-home development. So it's a bit, I guess, not disingenuous, but a bit of a misdirection for the government to say, oh, this is, you know, an issue between Māori, when really it's not. It's an issue with Fletcher Building. It's an issue also with the government, which is why those land protectors have been saying to the Prime Minister, we want you to come here and we want you to listen. We want you to get a handle on this issue because we think you are the only person with the power to actually solve this, which I think is probably right. She sent in her Māori ministers over the weekend, Willie Jackson, Penny Henare, and Anaya Mahuta had a quite productive meeting yesterday with the land protectors and the other parties. But I think when it comes down to it, the only person who will be able to carry the issue and carry the rest of the country on the issue is the Prime Minister. So she's got to get in there at some point.
As you're saying, though, a lot of critics are talking about it being, we've talked about it being sort of maybe a misdirection to say an inter Māori issue, but also this sort of private property thing. How can the government, step in and involve themselves in this in a way, as you were saying, that carries the public with them, or that kind of, opens up a bigger conversation around this?
Yeah. There are a lot of options on the table, from kind of the nuclear option, they could always expropriate it, all the way to kind of sort of elegant technocratic solutions like a land swap with council or crown land, saying, Fletcher Building, you can have this parcel of land and we'll take Ihumātau back. So there are all kinds of options on the table. I think probably the best option for both the government and for the land protectors is if the government steps in and says, Fletcher Building, we will purchase this land off your market price. That way they're not, you know, New Zealand's most important construction company is not out of pocket by $50 million. And then once the Crown has the land, to say, okay, land protectors, what do you want? Co-management board? Do you want heritage protection? Do you want to carve out some land for housing? And then take it from there, because that then eliminates the very complex problem of the private property rights issue. I think you have to remove that off the table as soon as possible. So that means purchasing the land from Fletcher Building. Whether the government does, whether they can swallow a $50 million plus bill, I'm not too sure. In the Auckland media market, as you and the listeners will know, it kind of leans right. And a lot of people will probably say, you know, the News Talk ZB hosts of the world will be saying, look at the socialist government intervening here. What are they doing? So for that reason, there will be a little bit of caution on the part of the Prime Minister and on the part of her ministers. But I don't think that's a reason not to act. Because if they don't act, okay, if they act, they might get hit by sort of the conservative crowd who never vote for them anyway. But if they don't act, then they'll get hit by their own constituents, Māori voters, people who sort of lean progressive. Sorry, yeah.
It's a tricky one. Yeah, it is a tricky one. You've called it Jacinda Ardern's foreshore and seabed moment. In 2004, when foreshore and seabed was happening, and I guess Labour's mishandling of it did lose a lot of support from those groups you were just talking about now, you know, it is a complicated thing for this government to approach and for Jacinda Ardern to approach as well. But do you think there is a way for her to do this, to get through it in such a way where she can kind of... Yeah, I guess carry the people along with her, the people that might have a more sort of conservative view on this, but then, as you were saying, also open it up so that it is a dialogue that kind of addresses these long histories of colonisation that kind of underpin the whole thing.
Hmm. I think she is the only person who could possibly sell any action there. If the Māori ministers were put in charge, I don't think they could sell it to the rest of the country. I think Jacinda Ardern is the only person with the... communication powers, really, to do it is a terrible term, but she's, I think, the only person who could communicate it to the country. But
you still there?
What's that?
Oh, you're still there. Your phone just beeped. That's all. Carry on.
Oh, well, that can't be good. Where was I? I think the only option really for her is to say, I'm going to come down on the side of my voters or my constituents rather than on the side of those conservative or perhaps even centrist people who oppose my taking action. I think that's the only realistic political thing that she can do. Because the cost otherwise would be too high for her.
Yeah, totally. Well, we might move on to talking about Oranga Tamariki, which is another big topic at the moment as well. There have been big protests this week organised by Hands Off Our Tamariki, who are a group that are calling for the end to the uplifting of Māori children by the state. What do you think are some practical measures that could be taken by Oranga Tamariki to address the issues in their systems? Because this is a huge problem that's been going for a while as well.
I think this issue is possibly even harder than Ihu Mātou, because again, no matter what you do, you're going to get slammed by one side or the other. We saw New Zealand First, when people were calling for the abolition of Oranga Tamariki, New Zealand First was saying, wait, hold on, because then, you know, babies are going to start dying, and went down that sort of scaremongering route. But then on the other side, you had people, mostly Māori people, saying, qualitatively, look at what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, 60% of all those babies who are taken are Māori. Often they're put into abusive homes, so taken from abusive environments or allegedly abusive environments, and then put into another abusive environment. What's the difference? A lot of people said to that. So, you know, you could come down either side of that issue. Whichever side, you're going to get absolutely slammed for it. So again, it's kind of hard to see where the government goes from here. They're definitely leaning towards a sort of root and branch reform. So the Māori ministers, or the Māori caucus, rather, in the Labour Party is working very closely with Tracy Martin, the children's minister. They're studying a lot of the previous reports over the last three decades into SIFs and Oranga Tamariki, trying to pick out sort of, you know, the best parts. Where can we, where are the recommendations that we can implement? You know, we want a recommendation that we can implement, you know, over iwi partnerships. We want a recommendation we can implement over, you know, the taking itself. So there's all sorts of work going on, but again, that's kind of, you know, I do feel sorry for the politicians in this one, because there's definitely no easy easy options.
You've actually been quite vocal in your admiration of Marama Davidson, who's been, I guess, like a leading voice amongst politicians in sort of vocally talking about Ihu Mātou and Oranga Tamariki. What is it about her sort of approach to this that's impressed you? And what would you like to see from other politicians? Because as you were saying, it's actually very tricky because these aren't contexts that have just recently appeared. This is a long, long problem.
That's exactly right. The thing that impresses me about Marama Davidson is her moral clarity, to be honest. It sounds kind of grandiose, but it's her ability to look at an issue and say that this is wrong and not to equivocate or anything like that. Because, you know, if you compare her stance on Ihu Mātou, she was very clear and that this is a wrong, and it's a wrong that the Crown should right. And she, interestingly, she was she stayed over the first night when the occupation started back in 2016. So, you know, she's been involved and had that clarity on the issue for many, many years now.
Mm.
And then you compare that with the reaction of those Labour MPs and those Labour government ministers who are like, oh, no, no, this isn't an issue for us. You know, who can know where justice lies in this issue? So I think what impressed me was that that clarity of hers and the contrast between her and everyone else.
Absolutely, it is really remarkable to watch. That actually might be all we've got time for this morning, Morgan, but thank you so much for speaking to us today. I'm sure we'll speak to you again in the future.
Cheers for that.
Thank you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.